Hello and welcome back to the Ocean Matters podcast. I stumbled on something because for those who like exploration, who like robots and images of shipwrecks and underwater and so forth. We've spoken of the Endurance, but there was a time when the site was the Titanic with all its mystery, and eventually a movie. A movie came out. Hi, I'm Captain of the World, and so on. And it was a very entertaining movie. A lot of people disliked it, others liked it, but it definitely had oceanographers pressed to do the best work they could do. And that was on the back of someone who actually found the shipwreck, Mr. Ballard, but that's not an accident. James Cameron made the movie Titanic, and James Cameron today is at the forefront of a lot of the underwater exercises and technology, and doing magnificent work. Very respectful of the environment, actually pretty much at the forefront in many respects, but also extremely dedicated and committed in ways that are beyond just being interested. I think that there's a very serious commitment there in a lot of the work that he has delivered, in the work that he is carrying out, and the work that he is supporting. But the article I found in The Guardian was not on him, but on Ballard. And Ballard is one of the gentlemen also out there who probably has worked a lot with Mr. Cameron on other topics, not even the Titanic. Actually, I'm pretty sure of it, since they share extremely tight and close interests. Here is the article on James Cameron that I found, sorry, again, lapsus, as they say in French, on Ballard, that was in The Guardian. The article is amusingly called I Discovered Hydrothermal Vents, but I'm only known for finding the Titanic. Here we go. Let's go through it. The discovery of these underwater hot springs in 1977 solved the mystery of how life first began on Earth. But it was locating the world's most famous shipwreck that made me a celebrity. Authored by the man himself, Mr. Robert Ballard. The mid-ocean ridge is where the Earth creates its outer skin. It's called the boundary of creation. We knew there was life on the bottom of the ocean, but not entire ecosystems supporting large animals, until our expedition went down there in 1977. First, we sent down an unmanned vehicle called Angus, which was essentially a camera system and strobe lights within a 2-ton steel cage. It was going down in the eternal darkness, slaloming back and forth like a skier down a mountain. We were exploring the longest mountain range on Earth, the mid-ocean ridge. We were looking for heat, and we theorized that there would be vents in the ridge, but we never expected to see large concentrations of life. After 12 hours of taking thousands of photos, Angus came back up. When we studied the photos, we found that at about 2,500 meters deep, where we had detected a sudden increase in temperature, the water got cloudy. Then we suddenly saw clams, giant clams the size of dinner plates, and tube worms that were 2 or 3 meters tall. It was like finding an oasis of life in the Sahara. It was like a rose garden. The room exploded with excitement on board the ship when we saw the images. Scientists become children when they discover something. It was like we never left middle school. The discovery solved the mystery of how life got a foothold on the planet, and it has led people to believe there is even more likely to be life elsewhere in our solar system. But we were not expecting to find a large ecosystem of life. We were all geologists. We invited biologists, but they didn't want to go because they said there's nothing going on there. We constantly remind them they weren't there when we made this historic biological discovery. We have to rub it in. The next morning, Three people went down in a submersible to the spot where we had photographed the clams the day before to bring up samples. The pressure hull within the deep-diving vehicles we used was tiny. Ours was about 2 meters in diameter, and we stuffed three people in there. It was like working inside a Swiss watch. When we brought the clams up to the surface, we realized they were functioning like no other organism we had seen before. When we opened them, we found that they had human-like blood. They looked more like beef than a clam. They weren't white, but red, full of hemoglobin and fleshy on the inside. You'd expect this blood to be circulating nutrients and other resources between organ systems. And yet, unlike most clams, they had no internal organs, no mouths. It was a mystery how they were feeding themselves. We looked under the microscope and found this very ancient bacterium, which wasn't even named at the time, living inside their bodies. It turned out the clams were being fed by the bacterium. I called a friend and tried to describe to him what we were seeing, and he said, "That's impossible." I said, "I'm holding it in my hand." It was really funny because scientists usually talk constantly and no one was talking. Everyone was trying to process it, thinking, "I don't know what I just saw." It was dumbfounding. We didn't really start to understand what was going on until we opened out water samples back on the ship. It was so strong in hydrogen sulfide, a corrosive gas that smells of rotten eggs. We had to open the portholes. We realized what we had found at the bottom of the ocean was a hot spring that had a chemistry that triggered life. We were always taught that life had to live in a very narrow pH. And all of a sudden, we were finding life in a very acidic environment. We realized that these clams and tube worms were actually ingesting the chemistry of the vents, using it as fuel. Their bacteria were harnessing the energy of hydrogen sulfide to fix carbon. That just blew the socks off science, because we had been told that all of life on Earth, of any major megafauna, was due to photosynthesis. It proved that life can exist in much more hostile environments than we thought. Underwater exploration has been my life's work. I've done more than 170 deep-sea expeditions over a career of more than 6 decades. I was born in Kansas. I'm the first of 13 generations of my family in America to go to college. When I discovered the Titanic in 1985, I became a big celebrity and went on all the talk shows. Days later, my mom called and said, "We watch you on all the TV shows and all the neighbors are calling, but son," she said, "it's too bad you found that rusty old boat. You discovered hydrothermal vents, but they're only going to remember you for finding that old boat." And mums are never wrong. Finding hydrothermal vents beats the hell out of finding the Titanic. It helped us understand how life got a grip on this planet and how it could be elsewhere too. It opens the doors to life and intelligent life throughout the universe. When you look up at the galaxies, wave because they're waving back at you. Jupiter's moon Europa and Saturn's moon Enceladus have oceans far larger than ours. There should be life in those oceans. I hope we can get over there, but it would not be a place you want to live. There is no plan B for the human race. As told to Phoebe Weston. A few words on Robert Ballard. Robert Ballard is a professor of oceanography at the University of Rhode Island, president of the Ocean Exploration Trust, and explorer at large at the National Geographic Society. The expeditions he has led include the discovery of the RMS Titanic in 1985. That's very amusing that he makes a comment on this, and then they refer to him as the man who discovered the Titanic in the description. Well, fantastic. Fantastic article by the man himself, Mr. Ballard. And fascinating to think that you could actually get more resources of food by the sound of it. Every little discovery like this is amazing. And this is dated now. It's about 50 years old, almost. And what else have we discovered that we are overlooking? Thank you very much for listening. This was the Ocean Matters Podcast.